You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Alan Scott.
So for a long time now, there's been one actress who I've been wanting to tell them that they are indeed badass. And guess what? I got my chance today, and you get to be my guest for this momentous moment when I get to tell the one, the only, Gillian Anderson that she is badass. And spoiler alert, she knows it. Ever since that X-Files theme music started, back when the show premiered in 1993, which, the fact that it premiered in 93 makes me feel insanely old, because, like, I remember the X-Files, and now I feel old. But we knew that Gillian Anderson was badass way back then. She just exudes it. And since then, she has continued to wow us with roles on the stage and screen in projects like her Emmy-winning portrayal as Margaret Thatcher on The Crown, in Netflix Sex Education, in Bleak House, The Fall. I mean, if you haven't seen The Fall, you need to see The Fall. I mean, yeah, Jamie Dornan, she is amazing in it as well. But Gillian Anderson in The Fall is just next level. But she's back at it in her new Netflix film Scoop, which tells the behind-the-scenes story of what went into making that historic BBC interview with Prince Andrew regarding his involvement with Jeffrey Epstein. Anderson plays Emily Maitlis, the journalist behind the interview, and wow, what Anderson can do with a performance is just, I mean, there's just no other word. It's just wow. What makes this performance so fascinating is that Anderson is able to take something that we've all seen, you know, I mean, who in the world hasn't seen this bombshell interview that literally, it literally took down a prince? Yet somehow Anderson was able to make that her own. It was almost like I was watching it for the first time. I mean, this film lays out the story of how this interview came about in such a fascinating way, and I really think you're going to enjoy it. I mean, she's just badass. There's no other word to describe Gillian Anderson, so I'm not going to make you wait any longer. Go on and grab a snack, because I will be right back with Gillian Anderson.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I have to tell you, I am such a huge fan of yours. And I have to tell you something, a thing I quote of you. I don't even know if you said it, but it's you as Margaret Thatcher. it's you as Margaret Thatcher. And I say it all the time. I'm always like, years and years. And I just every time I say year, I have to say it like you as Margaret Thatcher. And it's,
oh, that's hilarious.
It's kind of upsetting, and maybe a little
embarrassing. That's hilarious. I wonder if it does actually exist in the show.
I feel like it might. I feel like it has to, because I watched it obsessively. So
otherwise, it would be too disturbing.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's something wrong with me. Well, it's lovely to meet you. Speaking of The Crown, you are back. I watched the film. You are back in the palace for this film, which was joyful on my end because I love you and I love seeing you in that realm. But also, it felt a little like, wow, Margaret Thatcher is coming back. But obviously, you're not Margaret Thatcher in this movie. Did you have any reservations about doing another film that revolves around sort of the royal family, you know?
You know what's so funny is that I've had people not reminding me that this has something to do with the royals, because when I first, you know, when I took it on, to me, it had, even though obviously it's a big part of the story, to me, that's not the big part of the story. And yes, we are talking about two old establishments in the UK, and one of those establishments not only, you know, is a royal family, but, you know, involves a prince. But the decision to do it had so much more to do with, would I have the balls enough to play Emily Maitlis, who is, at least over here, is so much a part of our consciousness, not least her podcast, was already listening to, you know, pretty much on a daily basis, but also, you know, her history with the BBC and how she left the BBC and her reportage periods and her reportage in the States and all that kind of stuff. So it was more about my main concern was that, and I wasn't even thinking, oh, it's another story that involves the royal family at all. And then because so much of it, at least the stuff that I was shooting, it's all in, you know, it's all in the BBC. It's all in the show. And so except for those couple of scenes beforehand, before the big interview, which obviously is in a wing of Buckingham Palace, so much of the show takes place where Emily is concerned outside and in her life and in, you know, and at the BBC. So it wasn't until afterwards when people started asking me that. And I was like, really? Well, I didn't even think about it in that context.
I mean, it must be.
That's compartmentalization right there.
We follow what we want to believe in our heads half the time. Which me thinking that maybe you said years and years in The Crown. Who knows if you did? I'm going to rewatch and find out if you did. But I was watching it thinking, like, I followed your career for so long now, and I've seen you do like so many different types of things. But for a role like this, similarly to Margaret Thatcher, but especially with this, because it is so recently in our consciousness, this video, this interview, for us here in the States, it was this massive YouTube video that we had to watch on YouTube. Then, and we know it so well. It's so referenced. Yeah. It's so visually recognizable that it must be daunting to recreate something and make it your own. How do you make it your own when the entire, literally the entire world has seen this video?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's the same in how do you tell this story, period, when everybody knows the beginning and the middle and the end, or at least knows the end result, right? Yeah. So how do filmmakers tell stories like about Apollo 13 or about, you know, where we know what the final, you know, what the final action is? And yet, I really feel like they've figured out how to do that, you know, and it felt evident even in the script that I was reading when I said yes to doing the project. It felt new and fresh and propulsive, and you know, it felt very much like a thriller on the page. And so for me, it was, as much as anything, it was, you know, finding out whether I thought that the director, in speaking to him about it, would be able to create as muscular a thriller type story as I was reading on the page. Because, you know, you can try to do that, you know, it's the fact that the end product is actually feels so much like what was on, you know, it was Peter Moffat's script. And I guess I was, what I'm trying to say is that I was surprised, like, when I, because those two things don't necessarily, you know, they don't necessarily come to fruition. If you hope that they do, and that, you know, what you see when you sit down in the movie theater is what you were imagining.
Yeah.
It might be based on what you read, and it's not always the case. So I was a big fan of Peter Moffat's writing anyway.
I mean, it does play like a thriller. It really does. And there's, but what also was so interesting to me is that there's a moment that Emily, and of course, you know, this is a behind the scenes moment that we don't know much about this, that she, and it might just be, you know, Peter's amazing writing setting up this character, but that, because she's a journalist, I mean, I'm a journalist too. And I think about getting, you get the story, you go in and you try to do your best to sort of get the humanity of the person you're talking to get them to tell and open up to you. And, and for Emily, she's thinking, but she also has her persona in her head, which I think is so fascinating, thinking about the Bill Clinton interview, regretting the things that maybe she did or didn't ask. And because she knows that it isn't just the question she's asking. It's her asking these questions. It's her.
Yeah.
It's coming from her and what the viewers view her as, you know, like you were saying, she's iconic. And I wonder if that stood out to you, that she's not just being a journalist here. She's also having to use her own persona to try to get this man to open up to her.
Well, I guess what I was impressed with, once I started doing the research and I went back to look at the interview from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. One, I was impressed with how gentle she was with him at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously she eventually, you know, she leans in quite heavily, but she starts very gentle and, you know, she doesn't always start, you know, she's fierce, mm-hmm. and particularly with politicians and holding authority to account. But there was strategy, and whether that was strategy that was her own strategy in her own mind, or whether it was, as, you know, Sam McAllister tells the story, this is Sam's mm-hmm. version of events, that there was a rehearsal period and that they properly talked through over a 3-day period how the questions were going to be asked, and the tone to take and the degree to which his level of privilege would influence his answers, or how he perceived her, or how he perceived the questions, or, you know, and whether, you know, I think one of the things that they discussed, and I think it stayed in the film, was about the degree to which he is so used to being right.
Yes.
You know, and being listened to and not interrupted and et cetera, that you could use that knowledge of how he will likely respond based on that mm-hmm. to track your path towards, you know, not ensnaring him, but, you know, but yeah. you know, getting him to actually answer the questions, mm-hmm. Because at any moment he could have walked away, right? At any yeah. moment, if she, you know, pushed too hard or mm-hmm. Was in any way, you know, maybe seemed disrespectful or any point, he could have said, you know, forget this. I'm not doing you this favor anymore.
Yeah.
And this is out of line.
The one thing that did stand out to me in the film is that the delicate dance that women have to make in these sort of positions. And it isn't just Emily or even McAllister. It's all of the women playing these different roles. I mean, the film starts out with the head of the BBC, a woman, announcing layoffs, and sort of the delicate dance that female bosses have to make, or even Prince Andrew's PR person, the woman who's in charge there. And all of these women with these really fascinating roles that they have to dance around men, and how they do those dances to get what the job that they need done. And I wanted to know if that stood out to you, because it was so fascinating to me.
I mean, I think it definitely feels to me like it stands out more in the film than I had necessarily noticed it on the page. Mm-hmm. You know, also particularly the head of the BBC going, you know, finding him in the opera to get the answer about what yeah. they could, you know, and that is interesting. And I'm glad that stands out. But by the same token, one thing I really love about the script is the degree to which you have all of these women, and they are all incredibly powerful forces in their own rights, but also completely unique and different characters. Their personalities are incredibly mm-hmm. different and well-drawn, and I particularly appreciated that. And you know, some of that is obviously really good casting, mm-hmm. but also, you know, in the dialogue, etc., you feel like everybody has a unique perspective. But, you know, the one of the things that I learned in doing the research, just in terms of how unique the situation was that Emily found herself in at that time anyway, at the BBC, and being at the top of her game, you know, being such a senior reporter, you know, paid, it turns out, disproportionately, but still paid yeah. quite well for a woman historically. And, you know, that she carved that for herself over time, mm-hmm. but that it was unique, a unique position for her to be in. You know, at the end of the day, she ended up stepping away from that by choice, and was incredibly eloquent about why she chose to do that after the effect. But even though I think we see these women in this film, I think normally when you walk into the BBC, potentially it's not that it's not so heavy. I don't think historically, as I think where I understand the BBC to be, that there are historically so many women in powerful positions or making decisions. So that's interesting.
And yeah, it also shows that we have a lot more work to do, and even in newsrooms for marginalized voices. But I also, one of the things, I mean, going into this, as soon as I saw this trailer, I was like, I need to talk with her. I need to talk with her. Because as I said before, I followed your career for so long. You have a habit of, I know, playing, when I go into a Gillian Anderson movie or television show, there's going to be a badass woman. She's going to be playing someone complicated, interesting, but always badass in the way that maybe, like, I didn't agree with necessarily Margaret Thatcher's politics, but I thought she was badass in the show, you know, and you find the badassery of all of these women that you play, I think, in a really interesting way. And I wanted to know, how do you choose your roles? Because it does seem like the badass is intentional.
I mean, people generally come to me with stuff, you know, that they would imagine I might be interested in playing. And I think people, not that I'm necessarily typecast in that way, because I don't feel like...
I don't think you are.
On the one hand, that I am. But, you know, now what people are coming to me with are presidents of the United States or blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And
like, I was just, you know, in my... like combat boots in the other room baking banana bread with my kids. Not that presidents of the United States can't do that, but most of the time I'm just completely, you know, that's about the extent of what I can handle at any given time, let alone, you know. But I do, I mean, I feel like I've been incredibly, incredibly lucky in terms of what has come my way. And, you know, a lot of it is, no doubt it's the same person over the years making the decisions in terms of, so therefore the common denominator is me saying yes or no to things. And it's clear that I'm more likely to say yes to something if it feels like it's, you know, I would have said, you know, more three-dimensional or complex or whatever, but certainly you could put badass on there as well. It's probably something that I lean more towards than another adjective.
It's definitely something that my boyfriend and I, whenever we watch anything of yours, we're like, yeah, she's badass. Like, there's just, I mean, there's just no, like,
it'd be very interesting for people to read the script beforehand to see whether they actually contained any badassness before I got, or they're just, I've just forced them into that.
I mean, however it manifests, we're here for it, because you've been doing very well with it. Well, speaking of that, like, there is, I mean, you have such a, I mean, I posted yesterday just sort of just like questions for you, just like ideas on my Instagram. And it was so interesting because I got so many replies from people who just in various different ways are obsessed with you from different shows and different things. And I mean, it just, there are so many people who want another season of other things that you've done, be it X-Files. Mm-hmm. I'm in the camp of The Fall. I want another season of The Fall. Like, there's so many different people. How does that feel that your fans are so rabid in a way for you to go back to these characters that you've created in the past that they love so much? And I mean, you've clearly moved on. You're doing other things. You're doing amazing things. But we're sitting here being like, we need another season of XYZ of so many shows.
Yeah. You know, I guess that to a certain extent that, you know, proves, you know, how lucky I've been to be able to be a part of some of these, you know, iconic shows like The X-Files. And I mean, I certainly feel like we answered that call from the fan base, you know, ad nauseum. By the end, we kept coming back and coming back. And I feel like we definitely showed up for that. With The Fall, it's something that, you know, I think we all were interested in potentially having another, you know, at least one more season, or it felt like it. She feels like a character, Stella feels like a character that you could drop into at any stage, and I don't necessarily feel that it's completely done. We did try for a fourth at one point. We were toying with various things. Alan Cubitt, the writer and showrunner, was playing around for a while, and And then it ended up getting dropped, or he moved on, or I'm not sure what the at the end of the day what the but I get it. I get it, particularly with her, and feel the same way. But don't think that even though it's stalled at the minute, that that doesn't mean it can't happen in the future. But you know, that is an example of a script and a project that was, you know, really unique in a way, just the quality of the writing and the character, just such a special, you know, I think those characters, in my experience, only come around once a decade or, you know. So, but to your point in terms of, I'm, my fans over time have really stuck and followed my journey, and it's amazing. I mean, I'm incredibly grateful. And also that they seem to embrace pretty much whatever the decision it is that I make, whether I'm, you know, whether it's TV or film or even theater, and they show up very often, over and over again to see shows, plays that I do. And so I feel, very lucky to have such a long, lasting fan base, and also that there seems to be, you know, more people still discovering X-Files, and people just going through Gene, and a new kind of fan base. And also, you know, as I'm getting more involved in other areas, you know, I've got a drinks brand now, and that's growing into various other things. And so it feels like I'm being told what it is in a way that the fan base is, what it is that they want and they expect from, you know, in a way that there's been, you know, now that I'm in conversations with brand specialists.
Yeah. Well, that's, I wanted
to never have before. These questions are being asked. They're doing research, which I've never done in my life on my own, but people are coming back to me saying, this is what they say out there. this is what they expect. This is who they are. These are the age ranges. Mm-hmm. This is how they see you. This is, you know, and that's all news to me. But great, you know, it's all positive.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I only have two more questions for you, but I have to ask, like, about that. You have become like a social media darling in a way. And it's wonderful because, I mean, as a fan, I want to see more of you, but I also, your personality is coming through in, yes, your drink line, but also your writing and also your fashion. And it's all going viral in ways that I love to see, but also I'm like, oh, she's a bit of an influencer here. Like there's not just all these amazing characters that I love and I own everything of. So I wanted to know, like, are you surprised, especially with the launch of the drink line and the other things you're doing, how much of a social media darling you actually are kind of becoming?
I mean, on the one hand, becoming aware of it really for the first time in the last year since the drink has launched and since I've started to talk to various people about, you know, how to grow it, and at the point that we bring it into the States, and
I'm
all
dying
that kind of
for
stuff
it to come
where,
here. Dying for it.
It's really good. But, you know, those are the kinds of conversations, not just that I haven't had, but I haven't ever wanted to have. It's not like I've sat thinking, oh, if only I could, you know. And so it's taken other people to kind of turn me around by the shoulders and say, look at this, pay attention to what the potential is here, because, you know, people on the one hand seem to be, you know, really drawn to the characters that I play for one, right? So starting to look at what that is, what is it about these particular characters that makes people say, create a bumper sticker that says, what would Stella do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what is that? What are they saying they want? What are they getting here? Mm-hmm. And not just through characters, but in other ways, can we find ways to answer that? Mm-hmm. But also certainly because the fan base, because of X-Files and because of Gene Milburn and because of whatever, the demographic is so wide, that's inclusive of everybody. We're not just, you know, as a drinks brand, we're not just focusing on women per se. Yes, it's very And there need to be more healthy drinks that are skewed towards women, particularly energy drinks, because so many of them are so macho.
Aggro.
And not very good for you. So, but there's also an equity and diversity and inclusion. There are so many things that when the brand people say, okay, these are the things that you seem to represent, why not take advantage of those things to create something that makes people want to come because they feel safe and represented and respected, and that there's a platform for, you know, to share there. So anyway, so that's kind of where we're headed.
I think we all just want to be, I mean, I think I know the answer to this. We all just want to be as badass as everything you've done. And we want to, it's that badass energy of like, when we see you, we're like, oh, we want more of that. Even just wearing the dress you wore to the Golden Globes, it's like, that's badass. And we want to have that energy. And I think that that really is the underlying feeling that I think people respond to the things that you do, which is why I want the drink here.
But what's interesting is they're responding to it as if it's something that's out there. And what we're trying to have the conversation about is to what degree it already exists inside you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's the thing. It's not me.
Yeah.
It's not the characters. It's not, yes, you're responding to that, but that exists already inside of you.
I'm leaving this interview feeling like I'm badass now. I love it. Well, my last question for you, and I have to ask you about this, is your forthcoming book, Want. It's the collection of letters, you know, anonymously written by women. I think it's such a fascinating project for you to be. I mean, I feel like it's perfect for you. I wanted to know, in collecting some of the things that you've collected for the book, what surprised you about it? And if you could tease a little bit about what surprised you, because I have it pre-ordered. Don't worry.
Surprised me. I mean, on the one hand, I wasn't surprised that they're still kind of part of the same thing, which is, and I guess I know that already in a way because of the research that I've done or my team has done around around my drink and the idea of pleasure, but the degree to which women are very often afraid to express what it is that they want to their partners. You know, particularly in bed, but in an intimate way, in a sexual way, that many women, I won't say the majority, but I feel like it was a very large percentage when we did the, it's not a scan, it's a thingy, a poll, that women are more likely to reach climax separate from their partners because they are, so in their own time. Because they don't want to waste his or her time, or they don't want to, they feel like it's it'll take too long, or they won't really want to, or they don't do it right, and they don't know how to share with them that they, I'm interested in that because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And so I that also surprised me in these letters, the degree to which women wrote about that in their letters.
Well, I can't wait to get it. And I can't wait to see everything else that you're doing. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and bring the drink to the US. We need it.
Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And we will.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, you'll have them.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Well, thank you again. It was a pleasure and honor. And I hope this happens again sometime.
Same. Thank you.
I love that Gillian Anderson basically said that I was badass. Like, she said that we all have the Gillian Anderson badass energy within us, and she wants us to bring it out. And I'm here for it. I'm here for anything she does. Literally, I will show up to her reading a phone book, and which is a weird expression because phone books don't even exist anymore. But I would still watch Gillian Anderson do that. Let me know what you thought of today's episode. I'm H. Allen Scott on everything, and leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. And you know what to do. Go to Newsweek.com, follow all the news and follow Newsweek on all the socials. And while you're there, subscribe to my newsletter for the culture. Until then, watch something fun and have a great day.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.